listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kourula. We are going to start another pandemic episode of Wake Up Hollywood via Zoom / StreamYard, whatever you want to call it. We're going to welcome our special guest tonight, singer-songwriter Rosie Nolan. Say hello, Rosie.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm good. It's really nice to be here. You know,
we recently had the pleasure of doing Songwriters in the Round together, and I was blown away with your music. I was like, I got to get this wonderful talent on my songwriting showcasing show of artists. So I'm very happy you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
How have you been doing with everything going through the pandemic and just like, you know, the music industry is upside down right now? Are you still hanging in there? Is everything all right?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of picking up speed now, which is really nice. I actually started at the beginning of the year working with a music life coach.
Oh, nice. And
she, because I was in a bit of like a standstill there creatively. So that really kind of like got me going in terms of like writing more music and like planning shows, and I as like send a management at High Plateau awesome. Productions, which is super awesome. Exciting. So things are starting to move again, which is a relief. It's always a relief because you just never think it's gonna happen again, but then it always does. So it's still well, nice.
it's a weird time, you know. The funny thing about what we do, it's
the weirdest.
You know, I know every musician was always working on music, like on some level. Like in any other career, it's like, oh, we can't have you come into the office or whatever. People aren't like, oh, I can't wait to keep working on work that I don't need to do. But every musician I know, it's like they're working on stuff. They're trying to write songs. They're trying to look for another way to kind of like make money or figure out this new paradigm. So it's awesome that you're still hustling, and that's what counts, because it will pay off, you know?
Yes, I certainly hope so. Yes.
So let's go to the way, way back, because a lot of people don't know your music, and I want to know myself, what got you into music? What was the Zen moment that you were like, I want to be a musician?
The Zen moment was me at 16 down in Berkeley, at this punk club called Gilman Street, and I was in an all-girl punk rock band then.
Awesome.
And we played our first show, which we had like practiced like incessantly in, you know, my mom's basement. I played drums. We kind of played whatever instruments like our family already had in the house. So I played drums because my brother had a drum set. My friend played guitar because her dad had a Gibson SG, and we just kind of went that route. And we played our first show, and I was like, this is it. I was 16 years old. I was like, I figured it out. And it's the only thing I've ever figured out, quote unquote. Like, I never had anything moment.
You know, it's kind of funny because it's like, it hits you in that moment, and then there's so much work to be done. So it's like, I know what I want to do, but there's about a million other things I got to do to get there, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So it's awesome that it hit you like that. Was it the rehearsals? Was it the gig? Was it all of it? Was it the music?
I was performing live. I really love performing. You know, rehearsals are fine. Studio stuff, I'm kind of like always really anxious being in the studio, but like I love performing. I just love it. If I could do it all day, every day, I would. That's where I kind of am at most, like feel the most myself and the most at ease.
Well, it's funny because it's like, it's definitely a conversation that you have with an audience, you know, as a performer, yeah. But it's not one with words, which is just do your thing and then that's I always feel like talking in between songs, like only now, like, you know, I'm like 20 years in, only now am I like comfortable talking in between songs. Mm-hmm. You know, it just takes you out of it in that moment where you're performing and you're in the music. And then as soon as the song ends, you're yanked out of it. And then you're standing in front of a bunch of people that are waiting, you know, to hear what you're going to say.
Yeah, for sure.
So let me ask you, do you still play drums?
I would, but I kind of don't have access to drums at this time. But I would love, like, I'm like always threatening to, you know, play drums for my son. I would love to. Like that.
Like, I'm always threatening to play drums. If you watch what you said, I'll play drums.
Well, I'm just secretly hoping somebody will ask me to play, you know, have them play drums for them in their band or something. I'll do that.
Hardest instrument, I think, to play. Because it's like using all your appendages, you know, it's like put it all out there and keep the beat. Were you singing harmonies and stuff while you're doing it, or you just playing drums?
I was screaming. I don't think there were any harmonies going on. Like, it was just a lot of screeching and it was awesome. I mean, it's like the first time you do anything. It's like the first show and the first time you plug in your guitar into an amp or, you know, it's like all those firsts are just like, you know, they forge those memories in your brain and they're there forever.
Well, you feel the rush too. It's like you feel every moment of that rush and it's like you kind of chase that rush every moment after, you know.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. So when did you start playing guitar, other instruments? When did you branch out?
I guess a little bit later, not too much longer. After that, I wanted to write songs and guitar seemed like the way. Yeah, I started writing songs. And then, you know, and then kind of veered more towards country, more towards rock and then more towards country and less away from, as I got older, like less away from screechy punk rock, which I still.
When did that change? When did that, like, was it high school? Was it post high school?
I think like college kind of got indie, was like indie rock period. I mean, that was like late 90s, early 2000s. So college was like became indie. And then I moved to New York and somehow got really into this singer songwriter scene. Which is big there, but specifically into more of the alt country Americana stuff that was going on.
That's awesome. In New York? That's amazing.
Yeah.
There, you know, I find like New York has every genre. Like there's a scene. There's a scene. Like I put the club in a folk club and they're like, oh man, when the Russian folk bands come through here every week. And I'm like, wait, did you say every week? And they're like, oh yeah, there's a huge Russian folk scene in New York.
What venue was that? Do you remember?
I can't remember the name of it, but I'll have to look it up.
For everybody and every, there's, you can definitely find your audience there.
Where did you live in New York?
I was in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. Okay. And I played a bunch in the Lower East Side where a lot of the smaller kind of singer-songwriter venues, Rockwood.
I love that venue.
Rockwood. I like started out at Rockwood. And
awesome.
When it was just one little place. And now it's like three stages or something crazy.
Yeah, I'm afraid to go back because I played when it was just one little room.
Yeah.
People handing like tip jars around.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And now it's like a lot bigger and it's a vibe together. How do you feel about the singer-songwriter scene when you were in New York, like kind of getting into that?
Oh, it seemed very competitive.
Really?
It seemed really competitive. And, you know, maybe it was me being competitive, but it felt very competitive to me. And there's so many great writers there and people like – people with a lot of ambition usually end up in New York at some point in their lives or, you know, like, so there's like everybody was at the top of their game and it was like, you couldn't just be good. You had to have like, you had to be great and you had to have like, you had to have it really nailed down. So it could be quite intimidating because there were so many excellent performers there. But at the same time, even like that for me was inspiring because it forced me to keep growing and writing and developing and, you know, trying.
And then you started slowly getting more into country music. Was it kind of something that evolved with time? You just started because like going from punk music to country music, that is a huge turn. So I want to see that evolution. So you went, that makes sense. You went like emo, kind of like post.
Yeah.
Singer-songwriter. And then you came to country. What was the artist or album that did it for you?
Lucinda Williams, who was just, I have a poster of her right up here.
Lucinda Williams. I have a crazy story for you after you tell me this. Go ahead.
Everybody has a crazy story about her. I fucking adore her. Sorry. Ooh, I swear.
No, you're allowed to swear. It's okay.
Lucinda Williams, I heard a friend of mine played her album. Which one was it? It came out like early 2000s. I'm spacing on the name of it. Played her album and it was like, it just hit me different. I was listening to more of a country vibe with some of their stuff. And so I was doing kind of more, like I was going into that more classic rock and got really into the band and like, just kind of like gateway music. So, and then I heard her and it just kind of clicked because it was like, okay, this is rock, but it's country, it's folk, but it's got an edge to it, like punk rock. There's something punk rock about it. And it just kind of like, it all like melded together. And she's just been like an icon of mine since then, basically.
That's awesome. I had a tremendous experience seeing her. I had an old publicist, maybe this was like 2003 when I started out. So we were like playing and this publicist was like, come with me to Joshua Tree to see Lucinda Williams. I'm like, cool. So we went to, there's a venue there. I'm blanking on the name.
Something. Pappy and Harriet's?
Pappy and Harriet's. That's it. So we went to Pappy and Harriet's. It was like, she came out at like 10:30, played for like an hour and a half. The band was killing. It was like outside. And I was like, it was like the perfect setting for that music too, because it's all like, all those elements are in the environment. So I was just like so blown away because I knew of her music on records, but I'd never seen her live. So seeing her live in that environment, I was just like kind of like dumbfounded because she was so good. And then this publicist was like, hey, do you want to come meet her? And I was like stumbling. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, oh, she's an old friend of mine. So we went on her tour bus and like hung out with her. And she had just like broken up with a boyfriend, and she was telling us all about it. It was just the three of us hanging on our tour bus, and I was like, this is one of those moments I'm never going to forget that nobody will ever believe, but it was just like, we were just talking about music and writing, and she was like, gut-wrenching, like, about, you know, all of the pain that she was going through, and how she was putting it into music, and putting it into a new record, and that was so long ago, but she is just a gem. She's like one of those amazing songwriters that is, like, unchanged by whatever is trending or whatever the times are doing. And those are like my favorite songwriters. That's me awesome. Too. That's awesome that she's such a big influence for you.
Huge. Huge. Yeah.
So did you like try to emulate some of those like, you know, arrangements in your own writing, or did you kind of like start going down the rabbit hole and start listening to all of her records? What was the process?
I think all of that. I think I probably tried to copy her. I mean, I still, every now and then I'll like write a song and I'll think, oh, this is very Lucinda Williams, you know, like, and you know, I just love her phrasing so much, has really informed a lot of the decisions I make when I'm writing. But I definitely like, I've seen her play maybe like 8 times, maybe more, like all different venues across the country. Like, that's awesome. I don't really adore that. Like, I don't idolize and adore people that often. So when I do, I just really sink my teeth into it.
I'm the same way. like if I love a songwriter, I will literally, I just did this. I just discovered a songwriter named Ben Rector. I don't know if you know Ben Rector, but I'd never heard of him. And I just stumbled on a YouTube video and he wrote this song about old friends. And I just lost my best friend like 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, let me listen to this song. And I just ended up like weeping like a baby listening to this song. And it was like an uplifting song just about old friends. Like, you'll never make old friends because those friends were there at a certain point, you know? So I literally started listening to his record, bought one record, and then just bought all of his records. Just like, I was like, I need every song that this guy's written in my catalog just to like know his story, because that's how it is. When you love a songwriter, you want to know their evolution of life because they're putting it in their records, they're putting it in their songs, and they're putting it out there. So I know you relate to that. Tell me how that kind of is influencing your own creative process.
How, what exactly?
You go through the spectrum of emotions, the spectrum of listening to people, you're finding your sound. How does that kind of like evolve into you making records or you making songs or what songs go on a record for your creative output?
There's this sense of wanting, if I get a certain like feeling or rush, you know, I get like a weird, sometimes we'll like shudder if it's really
intense. That's awesome.
Like if I get that feeling, then I want to like recreate it for other people. Cause I know it's like some purity of emotion and expression. And so, I think I've always tried to feel my way through everything I write. So if I'm not feeling it, if it's like lacking a certain level of impact, then I'm gonna probably put it to the side or, you know, but it's gotta make me feel something when I'm singing it, you know, so that's.
So tell me a little bit about your creative process. Do you start with lyrics? Do you start with a melody? Do you start with kind of a groove on an instrument?
With my guitar, I have been adding other instruments recently in the past like 5 years or so, but usually like vocal melody and, you know, a chord progression will kind of start it out. And then maybe I'll get a line or two. If I'm lucky, just right out the gate. But usually I'll get a few lines in the beginning and then I have to, and then the work starts. So I might have like some moments of inspiration and then I have to kind of like put my nose to the grindstone and then work it out. But usually a melody.
I love that you said that because when I heard your songs, I like right away thought this girl takes her time writing. And that there's something special about those kind of writers because it's not flagrant. It's not like, oh, this is just kind of, I think you played like three songs, maybe three or four. And it was just like every song I was like, man, these are well thought out. These are well versed in poetic prose, but also in just like simplicity and just emotion and story. And those are the songs and the songwriters that I'm always like, I'm combing to find because I find inspiration from listening to songwriters that do that because it makes me want to slow down the process or maybe start a new process in a different way because it makes me think of the creative process in a completely different paradigm, you know?
Yeah. Well, what's your experience with writing? Do you try and take your time or do you give yourself a deadline?
I don't give myself deadlines unless it's a record. I try to, I'm like always eye on the clock when I'm making a record just because every hour and every minute, you know, is, you know, you're paying for it. So,
yeah.
But when it comes to writing, I love finding songs. I just live for songs that I can, you know, put into my soundtrack of life. And if there's a song that just hits me, I have to learn the progression. And then I have to learn the riff. And then I have to learn, like, what they're doing on the melody. And then realize, oh, this is how it relates to the chords. And then what I'll do is I'll take those and I'll jumble them all around. And I'll write something that doesn't sound anything like it, but is, like, relatable to it. So sometimes when people are like, oh my god, I really love this song, I'm like, are you a fan of Van Morrison? Are you a fan of so-and-so? Like, yeah, how did you know? I'm like, because this song I took from a Van Morrison song or a Ray Charles song or a Dave Matthews song, whatever it is. So
that's so cool.
I'm always learning songs because it's like I just love songs, you know? Just get into any, and it doesn't matter the style or sound, or sometimes it's could be a vocal, could be like a Sia song that's like a melody that I'm just like, oh my god, this is so great.
Yeah.
And then it could be a Dolly Parton song because I love country music, or a Willie Nelson song because who doesn't love, you know, those kind of iconic country stars. Let me ask you, as far as country music, how do you feel the shift of, you know, what's important in country music has kind of taken place in the last, like, decade, two decades, three decades?
You mean, like, the mainstream, like, country has gotten very...
Yeah, because when I read your bio, a lot of your influences are, like, awesome, huge, amazing country songwriters that are, like, 20, 30, 40 years old, like, as far as, you know, when they hit. And the market is so different than that. Like, it drives me crazy.
It's pop music now. Yeah. You know? And I don't, I mean, maybe every now and then something will come along that'll be a little bit of a guilty pleasure, and that's kind of fun, like, you know, but I don't connect really emotionally to too much of what's going, like, I mean, people have always said, oh, well, why don't you go move to Nashville, but I don't connect to what's happening there. I mean, I think there's some cool stuff happening underground there that's pretty awesome, but in terms of, like, whatever's happening on Music Row and, I don't relate or identify much with the music coming out of there. So I just, it doesn't draw me in so much. You know, I like more of the, whatever indie stuff or even throwback stuff that some artists are doing to, you know, there's a lot of that happening right now.
You're awesome. I feel the exact same. It's like, yeah. I kind of feel that way about pop music too. It's like, you know, I grew up with, like, Michael Jackson or Prince or Madonna. That's pop music to me. Yeah. And now I listen to pop music, I'm like, a lot of this is just okay to me. It's not like, get your booty up and dance. or like, this song is going to span decades and you're going to listen to it 30 years later. I just don't feel that.
Yeah.
I feel like country music does the same thing. I love all the old, you know, the old country songwriters that are, you know, great artists. Those are the ones I still listen to. It's like when I want country music, I'm not listening to newer stuff. I'm always listening to older stuff. So
yeah, exactly.
As a writer, I would feel like I love that you're like preserving that, you know, throwback sound, because God, that's my favorite stuff. It really is. So I hope you never like cater to the trends, because that stuff, it just doesn't move me in the same way that those old songwriters do.
Hey, you know? If they pay me, you know, maybe I will.
And you know what? Be careful what you ask for, because they will. They'll come and knock in and say, we need you. And you'll be okay, let's do it.
I'll never turn down sequins, no matter what.
All right. Fair enough. I respect that. So let me ask you too, when you're making songs in the studio, what do you feel are some of the biggest challenges from, like, you know, the writing process is so different than when you're in the studio and you're trying to recreate that moment of writing. What's one of the biggest obstacles when you're in the studio just trying to create?
My own head. You know, like, it's like every time I've gone in the studio, it's like I feel like I'm being forced to, like, look at myself, one of those, like, magnified mirrors.
Right.
And it's like, oh my God, don't make me do this. Like the sound, like I can't, the sound of my voice sounds like, doesn't, it's weird. Everything sounds weird. Like I'm hyper critical. It's like horrible. I do not like, I don't know. I know some people love the studio experience, but it makes me want to jump out of my skin. And maybe one day, like, I'll have like a producer or have a setup where it's not like, we got to get this done and hurry up. We only have this many takes. And like, you know, we gotta go, maybe I won't feel like it's like I'm on a death march or something, but it's always really painful.
If you know what, it's definitely, I remember wanting to quit when I first started. That's why I asked that question, because you are doing that. We're all looking under a magnifying glass at all the flaws that become, they come to the surface. As soon as you hear, you're like, oh my God, I'm not playing to the click, or oh my God, I'm singing out of tune here. It's like, you're also, the weird thing too, and I think about this all the time. We never perform or rehearse with headphones. Never, ever, 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 ever. So when you're in a studio, all of a sudden you're singing with headphones, it's a completely different experience. So I feel like that's a different animal than
performing.
You know? But I mean, I also see all the things you said, because I live them. And only now, I think after 18 years of making records, I'm like, oh yeah, I see the studio as something positive. I don't care about the things that I used to care about.
Yeah.
So you'll get through it. I promise
you. Yeah. Yeah, I know I gotta like put down like, you know, like I gotta give myself a break when I go in there. Like I'm in the process of finishing writing for an upcoming album, and I'm very much like we're not gonna like pick apart everything like we did last time. We're gonna like have a plan before we get in there. You know, also in the past it was like things like it like dragged out for far too long.
And how do you feel about the scene in, you're in LA obviously, right? Are you still
in LA? Yeah, right. I'm LA.
So the country kind of songwriter bluegrass scene, do you think it's like an opportunity to kind of establish that sound here in a bigger way? Because LA definitely needs it. There's no question about it. So I love that you're in LA and you're like, yeah, this is where I want to do my thing. So
yeah.
Tell me why it became like that place for you.
Well, there is like a kind of small country scene. Like, do you know about Grand Old Echo? There's like that honky tonk, some honky tonk country bands that have come out of there, and some great singer songwriters as well. And pre pandemic, I was definitely a lot more involved in that world. And then I've gotten really involved in the past like 4 or 5 years in the old time music scene, I started playing banjo about six awesome. Years ago, clawhammer banjo.
Is right here. That's a banjo right there.
Oh, really?
That's a banjo.
Awesome. Yeah, my banjo's right there.
You're a lot better than I am. I can tell you that already.
Oh, well, we'll see. I don't know. But that has really informed a lot of my playing and songwriting. And then, you know, it's like I was in a duo with a good friend of mine, and I was just like the banjo player and singer. And it was awesome because I got to be like instrumentalist and learn how to solo and like, you know, harmonize to her and like vice versa. And it was like, so I learned so much doing that. And then learning these old traditional tunes, like, we do these like jams and like there's these like workshops and camps, and we'll all go camping and sit around a fire and play like the same.
That's like, that's awesome.
Tune for like 10 minutes, you know, but it's like, it's so great. It's awesome. And I've learned a lot musically. It's been like a big education for me in terms of learning traditional music, you know, old time, some Cajun, and you know, it's been really cool. And that's pretty niche, like in LA. Like there's probably like, I don't know how many banjo players there are here.
I can probably count them on
maybe 12 or something, you know. And then of those, like who plays clawhammer style, like maybe like 5, I don't know. So it gets pretty niche, and which is cool, you know. But there is small little societies of people into it and doing jams, and that's
awesome.
That's what's been
something. What are we playing first? What do you want to play first?
You know, what did I give you? Why don't you play the most recent one, which is what did I give you? Oh, geez, Heaven's Name. Yeah, thanks, Ronan. I forget my song titles all the time. Heaven's Name.
Here it is, Heaven's Name.
Believe me, I cannot bear it when you tease me.
good. So good.
Thanks.
Where did you grow up?
San Francisco.
It's so cool because you have like this almost Southern accent, like vibe. It's just got this really honest, really beautiful country feel. And it definitely has this Texas, like anywhere you could be from Texas, from Tennessee, from Mississippi, Alabama, any of those. It's a, you have that honest twang in the right way. It's really beautiful.
San Francisco twang.
It's like, do you think it's because of the musicians, the songwriters you listened to that you were?
Yeah. It is. It's like, you know, I find myself like writing, you know, with words like ain't. Like, I never say ain't, but like, it's what would work. It's the only word that would work. Like, anything else would sound really awkward. So it's just like I have to a little bit like bend to the music style, and then that becomes who I am.
I love that you're making country music and you're from San Francisco, because I would never have picked that. Like, what a crazy combination, you know? How did that city, because that city's pretty vibrant, and there's definitely like that hippie vibe, like, which I love, you know, but there's definitely the Grateful Dead, all of those kind of like songwriters. Did you imagine?
So like growing up, like either you were into punk rock or you were into the Dead, and it was like never the twain shall meet.
Wow.
And like, it was very separated. And I know that there's a lot of crossover now, but I have this like 15-year-old like idea of like this, like, oh, this is the side I'm on, like I will never go to the other side. It's like the, like teenage whatever,
right,
mentality still attached to that. But you know, my boyfriend loves the Grateful Dead, and there's plenty.
They're awesome.
Plenty of great songs, but like, there's a part of me that can't not.
Like, I can't go there. I can respect it, but let me ask you. Yeah. You had a huge opportunity recently where you played Stagecoach. Tell me what that experience was like.
I almost played Stagecoach.
Oh, did it get canceled because of the pandemic?
Yeah, oh my God, I got booked for 2020, April, you know, a month, basically right now, a year ago, I got booked for it, and then they canceled it. It was one of the first things to get canceled. It was like, I think it was like South by Southwest, Coachella, Stagecoach. And then the rest.
But they're going to book you again. You're going to be on the bill. You're definitely going to be on the bill.
They've said so, but they keep canceling. You know, then they were going to push it 6 months. They canceled that. Then they canceled this year. So I'm hoping they have definitely written me and said in the past that they would have me again. So hopefully.
Yeah, they're not going to not book you. So you will play it. But I remember. I think that's what you were about to do when we were doing. The songwriters of the round. Maybe you were just about to get ready for that, and then that all this.
Yeah.
Everything got canceled. Everything's.
Yeah, it's just, and then it was like, and I was so upset, and now like, it's like, oh God, they can't cancel that, and then it's like when the whole world shut down, it seemed like the smallest thing in the whole world, but at the time, it just seemed like
it's devastating. Well, we also, because it's like opportunity, you know, it's like you finally get an opportunity, and then it's like, are you kidding me? It's canceled, you know.
I know
you'll have it. You're young too, so you got plenty of time to get back and do Stagecoach again. Do you know, like, do you have an idea of when your first gig will be, or are you just kind of like prepping for recording?
I have a gig actually coming up. My first we booked it today or yesterday. My first in-person show. I'm fully vaccinated now. Thank God. But and I know a lot of other people are well on their way. It's an in-person show at this theater in Hollywood called the Zephyr Theater, Do you know it? I think they mainly do like plays and. I'm going to be opening up for Rosa Pullman. Do you know her?
No, I don't know her.
She's local. She's an incredible songwriter and singer performer. She's fantastic. And that's going to be on May 5th. So that's going to be awesome. A real in-person, you know, I think it's going to be limited capacity.
I think Zephyr is on Santa Monica, I think, right? Isn't it
Melrose? I think it's Melrose.
Melrose. Oh, that's right by me. I'll be there. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. I'll have to wear a sombrero to commemorate the event. That's awesome. Well, that, you know, it's weird because, you know, what I worry about, it's like I had never not done a CD release show or not had a gig at least every month or every 2 months or even just a solo acoustic gig just to keep the muscles flexed. So I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to just get back. It's not like riding a bike. You definitely, it's like you have to harness that all over again. So
yeah.
Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are you hesitant?
Yeah. Well, I did a show with the High Plateau Productions folks a couple weeks ago, a streaming show. And that was good. That was really good for me because I have a lot of new songs anyway. So I was like, well, let's just like play all your new songs and see how it feels. So I now have an idea of like what it might sort of be like for me to perform. But yeah, there's definitely, I'm going to need to do a lot of rehearsing. And
isn't it weird? It's like everything is now different, but it's going to come back very fast. But it's just the fact that like there's my first gig is in September. Like, that's the only thing I have in the books, and I know it's going to happen. It's a festival, and it's just like, okay, I know that's coming, but it's like, man, I don't even know. Usually I would just rehearse the week of, and then we'd go do it, but now I'm like, maybe we should rehearse for a month and just kind of get used to playing.
Totally.
Because it's like it's a physical thing, it's a mental thing, it's all these things, you know?
Can you book like a smaller show like before, like our almost rehearsal?
Yeah, I may do that. I want to see what venues are going to open up. Like, because it's such a weird time. Like, I'd love to do something at my favorite venue right now is the Federal. Have you played the Federal?
Oh, in the Valley?
In Hollywood? Yeah, I like that venue a lot. So we used to play the House of Blues all the time. And then everybody that played the House of Blues, I mean, that worked in the House of Blues moved to the Federal. So
I've been there a couple times.
It's like a lot of the same. It's not the same vibe as House of Blues. I miss that venue more than anything. Like my favorite venues have all closed down. So I'm like still trying to find that. Did you ever play the Temple Bar by chance in Santa Monica?
I don't think so.
Probably way before your time because I think it closed down in like 2006, something like that. But it was a killer venue. I mean, they
there.
It's awesome. It's right on like Wilshire and 11th. It's not there anymore. It turned into the Dakota Lounge. That's where that club turned into. And then that club caught on fire. But those two rooms were great. But my favorite's House of Blues in LA because I'd gone to so many shows there as a student. And then being able to headline there was just like a huge thing. I just love that venue. So all my favorite venues are closing. So I worry about what's happening with the music venues and which ones will survive. But we will have to, you and I will have to play a show together.
I would love that.
I was just thinking when you were playing, your studio track was playing, I'm like, I got to do a show with this girl. I mean, you're super talented. Your songs. I love your voice. I love your songwriting. It's just fantastic. Let's have you play something. You play a lot, right?
Called March 12th.
What is that? The day of the pandemic? What? Tell me the story by that.
I don't know if I can. Okay. March 12th. It's the day. It is kind of the day that the pandemic's like everything shut down. But that's not exactly what the song's about.
Okay.
It's about a relationship.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. A kind of a writer that lived on my own. At the edge of the coast, I traced the wind for hours. You were the kind of admirer that left river stones. Preferred to be alone, but always succumb to your desire. You caved, and you worried, and all your will was gone. You loved in such a hurry. Who are you running from? Thank you. springs in April, I try to wash away the memories we made and pretend we were still the same. The roads curve around those hillsides like raspberry vines. Late summertime would curl around my fingers. UK, if you worry that all you will was gone, you love in such a hurry.
Is that going to be on your new record?
Yes.
Man, that is quite a song. Quite a song. Have you already recorded it? Are you in the midst?
No.
Of it?
I need to do so much around that. I'm actually looking for a producer. Like, I'm kind of shopping producers and studios right now and doing that whole.
Sounds so good. You can just do it solo acoustic. It sounds good.
Aw, thanks. Yeah. Seriously.
No, I mean, you know what? It's like sometimes I like when the like solo acoustic versions. I think you should do it with production, but you should do a solo acoustic version because sometimes you can sell the song twice that way. But also, there's an intimacy just doing it like that you cannot replace. There's no way you're gonna replace that.
Yeah,
you got a bunch of instruments and all that stuff. So I definitely hope you do at least a solo acoustic version in addition. Okay. A special edition version.
Special, like the, you remember the secret track on CDs? Like, how do you do that? How do you have a secret track?
You know
what?
I did that on my last record, and it was like the coolest thing to me.
Oh,
and
you did? Okay, cool.
Yeah, but people don't get it in the same way because, like, we grew up with that, you know? So it's like seeing that secret song was like a big deal, but now it's like it's not because it's just, it's already, you know, you sit on your iTunes. It's like, or somebody would be like, why is this song so long? And like, wait for it, bro. Wait, you know, it's like, people just want all the information. So I'm still that guy. I'm like ready to do secret tracks all the time because I love that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's so fun.
So tell me, like, you wrote this song, you went through a breakup, obviously, right? So did you write the song right away? Did it take some kind of process?
No, it's funny because this relationship ended in like 2012 and I wrote this song in 2020.
Wow.
So Yeah, it's the breakup awesome. That keeps giving, you know?
Well, I mean, those are the best songs. You know what? The fact that you were able to process it and put it into that, it's like, okay, your therapy session is done right there. Awesome.
Well, it's also, like, there's some things that I think with until you've had some time to, like, really reflect. And it took me a long time to have, like, enough distance between me and that time to be able to, like, even have, like, comment on it.
Right. Yeah. Well, what I loved is that you gave me chills on the line, what are you running from? Because, like, if there's ever a bullseye question to ask somebody, especially a past lover or relationship, it's like, that's it right there. That is the bullseye question, because that's what we're all afraid to answer. And you just, like, put it out there. It's like, you basically ask the question that every female would ask every relationship. You know, it's like, and it's true. So you definitely stopped me in my tracks, because I was like, whoa, that's a heavy, heavy lyric. And I love the honesty. It's just really, really beautiful. So it took you 8 years to write, but actually how long did it take? I can do that.
I wrote a line every other year. This one I think actually happened fairly quickly. Might have been a week.
Wow.
Like within a week.
Tremendous song.
Yeah.
It's weird. It takes you 8 years to just, like, put it into perspective. But it takes you a week just to turn it out. It's like, I mean, that's how it is. People think, I'm writing music for trends. I don't care about trends. I care about the therapy session. Because it's like, yeah. I think that's why we need music is, you know, to heal us on some level. Either if you're listening or you're creating it. So I know that song's going to hit people. That's going to be, you got to play that at Stagecoach. Remember this show, because I want that song in your set. So I have to be there for that. So tell me, as you know, you're making your record, how do you cut songs off from the record? Like, what is your, are you looking for the record to be a story as a whole, or is it going to have, like, different genres, styles, subject matter? How do you give the axe to your little babies?
You know, I think it's a little bit the same with performance. It's like, if something doesn't flow right, or I keep tripping over something, or it doesn't, like, sit right, I might, you know, I have certainly been like, well, I need a 12th song for this album, so I'm just going to throw that in there. I've done that. But my whole approach this time was to write more songs than I needed, so I wouldn't feel so like I was, like, forcing something to work, you know? So that's been my approach, is to, like, just kind of write more than I think I'll need, and then hopefully gets, you know, it'll be a little less precious, like, letting go of some of those songs. I mean, even now, while I'm rehearsing, I'm like, oh, like, I like that song, but I don't know. I don't, you know, it's got a different feel. You know, it might be a fun performance song, but maybe it won't sit right on the record, you know, or translate well. So,
all your songs are really strong, and that I have to imagine that it has to be a little tough to cut songs that you think could work, or, you know what I mean? There's got to be songs, even if you cut the ones that you stumble on, there's got to be ones where you're like, do I need this song when it's talking about the same person or the same subject matter?
Yeah, or it's like a little bit of the same. Yeah, it's the same feel. I have some songs like that are kind of like the same feel, and like put them on opposite ends of the album. But, you know, I don't know. That's why I'm just trying to write. I'm really just trying to write as much as I can right now, so that hopefully it'll make itself clear.
No, I asked that question because I'm constantly doing that. Like, I'm like, I try to be an album ahead of myself. Like, I make a record, and then I'm already thinking about what would be the next record. Mm-hmm. Just so, like, when it comes time, it's like calculated, and it's like, I know these songs are going on the record, and that's it. Because it can be agonizing to think of cutting a song, especially, like, I generally don't record more songs than I know they're going to be on the record. Like, a lot of people just sit and record, like, 30 songs and be like, out of those 30, I'll do 10. I'm like, oh, my God. That would be crazy that 20 songs aren't going to go on the record. So like, I know just like how much, what songs are going on. And some songs on this last record I did, I mean, some of them I saved for 20 years. I saved them not knowing why or knowing they weren't right for the records I was doing. And then they were right for this one. And so like there are songs that I wrote like 6 months ago versus 20 years ago, and they somehow went side by side on this record. So I find that process to be kind of amazing, like how people decide songs, because I'm fascinated by it, like how people put a song list together, an order, a set list. Nothing can be more fascinating because there's no wrong answer, and it's like you're like the chef, like making the menu. So I'm just like so curious about your process. That's why I love doing this show, because it's like I learn how to better my creative process by learning other people's creative processes.
For sure.
Understand, oh, everybody's going through the same thing or different things at different times, and it's all connected, you know. So when you're recording a song, or like, do you demo songs before you go into the studio and you kind of know, okay, this one's going on for sure, this will be track five? Like, how are you thinking of placing your songs like that?
Oh, geez. I don't know if I'm that well thought out, to be honest. Like, I think it's like, let's see. I mean, the EP, I was really clear. Like, I have like these four songs I'm going to do. I have this much time at the studio. This is like all we can do, you know? So it was just like, and then I rehearsed with the guy who played with me on it, Kenny Feinstein. And we just like rehearsed like constantly. So that we basically recorded them live for the most part, him and I. And then we had some overdubs and stuff, but we just wanted to get a good performance and then go in there, and it was all like live. It was all like old, like ribbon mics and all that stuff. So we go for a really fun. It was definitely like, let's just rehearse and then go into the studio, you know, like the Carter family would or something. And that was super fun. I'm glad I did it that way. I mean, this record, I really want to work with somebody else, in, like a really strong producer, because I feel like I'm at a place now musically where I'm like happy to like delegate and like take some of this off.
It starts to just become bigger than what you think, you know?
Yeah. Like I'm like, what do you think? You know, like I know enough about what I like that I'm not afraid someone's going to like take over everything like I used to be. So I'm like, yeah, what do you hear? Because sometimes I just can't see or hear things clearly, and I just need the feedback. So, you know, I definitely want it to be a more produced album this time around, and have like a whole, like, whether there's a theme, an overarching theme for the whole record, like I'd like to have an overarching vibe and tone.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
You need to record on tape. I would record you on tape, analog tape. Because it's like that sound is throwback, so it needs to have that old sound, you know. That's the way you capture that, I think. When you like listed Emmylou Harris as one of your influences, I was like, she nailed that on the head, because she sounds like, you sound like Emmylou Harris. You sound like Emmylou Harris meets Kacey Musgraves, which are two of my favorite country female songwriters. That's why I'm like, oh my God, all of her songs are awesome, because I love both those singers, songwriters.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Just awesome. So you kind of have that old throwback, but also like a new sound too. So I'm excited to hear this new record. Let's play your next track. What are we playing?
We're playing, it's a song off my album from almost 10 years ago, I Know Better. It's definitely more of a alt rock, alt country rock kind of vibe. So
okay, cool. Here's I Know Better by Rosie Nolan.
Dirty and old like you. I want my daughters to be
ass. There's your Lucinda influence song for sure.
Yeah, definitely for sure. Your
Lucinda on that one for sure. Yeah. Such beautiful songwriting. The records sound great. Rosie, I'm always going to want you on this show. Whenever you have a new record, feel free to come back. You've been a wonderful guest on Wake Up Hollywood, and we can't wait to hear more. Like, never get out of your head and just put it on record, because the world is waiting to hear more of it, because you're fantastic. I really
thank you so much, Nikki. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, we're going to have you back. So when your record's out, when you finish that record, we're going to have you back. But where can people find you if they want to find you on social media or all the social media
places? All the socials. My website is rosienolan.com. My Instagram is ROW_SEA, row C. And you can go and find out about my upcoming show and, you know.
And it's May 5th at the Zephyr.
May 5th at the Zephyr Theater in Hollywood.
What time?
Show starts at 7.
All right. Rosie Nolan, you are fantastic. Well, we can't wait to hear more from you. And we're going to have you more on the show. So please keep making music. Don't ever let the world stop you from writing, because you are a truly, truly gifted songwriter. We love it.
Thank you so much.
Of course. All right. On behalf of our listeners, we'll see you guys here next week. Rosie, keep writing them songs. We want to hear more, okay? And we'll hear from you guys as we keep on doing these shows. Keep these artists coming. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.